In June of 1979, a well-dressed stranger walked into the office of the Elberton Granite Finishing Company. He called himself Robert Christian. He claimed to represent a small group that wanted to erect a monument in granite that was meant to shape the global future of mankind. He called this monument the Georgia Guidestones. Also known as America's Stonehenge, the Guidestones are a collection of massive granite slabs. Etched into these stones is a set of 10 precepts or guides, recalling in some ways the biblical 10 commandments. They advocate reason and logic, population control, and the conservation of nature. The precepts are written in 8 languages: Spanish, English, Russian, Mandarin, Arabic, Hebrew, Hindi, and Swahili. The Guidestones are located deep in the rural South, and the town of Elberton is the nearest piece of civilization. It's a tiny place, about 90 miles from Atlanta, with a population of less than 5,000 people. The stones themselves are 9 miles north of town. The person who commissioned the construction of these stones chose to remain anonymous, and their true identity remains unknown. For decades, people have searched for answers behind these stones. What do they mean? Who are they for?
My name is Noel Brown, and I'm one of the 3 co-hosts of the Stuff They Don't Want You to Know audio podcast. When I was a senior in college, I actually made my senior thesis film on the Georgia Guidestones and was able to spend a pretty significant amount of time with some of the main players in this bizarre and fascinating story.
The first person R.C. Christian spoke to at the Elberton Granite Finishing Company was Joe Findlay Sr., the president of the organization. When Findlay realized this man was not pulling some sort of elaborate prank, he contacted Wyatt C. Martin, the president of the Granite City Bank.
Wyatt Martin was possibly one of the most important figures in the whole story of how the Guidestones came to fruition. He was one of 2 people that ever actually laid eyes on this mysterious stranger that went by the name of R.C. Christian. R.C. Christian, the man who conceived the project, was ultimately sent to the Granite City Bank, where Wyatt Martin received him, heard his requests, and agreed to act as his intermediary in the whole project. Everything from dealing with the craftsmen who would carve the different precepts into the stones, to the construction workers that would put up the pieces of granite. Every aspect of it, Wyatt Martin was sort of the man to talk to.
In the days and months following, Martin would routinely censor correspondence between Findlay and Christian. Christian would reveal his true name to Wyatt Martin, and to him alone.
I knew that I had to talk to Wyatt Martin. So I just looked him up online, found an address and a phone number, and gave him a call, and he very graciously welcomed me into his home.
I said, "Well, you say your name is Christian, that's not your real name, I don't believe." He said, "No, it's not. I use that name because I am a Christian." And I said, "Well, I'll have to know your name and something about you, because it costs a lot of money from what you're asking to pull those huge blocks of granite out of those quarries. And then all the preparation and the erection of it won't come cheap." He said, "On the basis that you will never divulge who I am or the group I represent, I will tell you. If you can swear to that, when you're dead and gone and I'm dead and gone, no one will ever know who erected or who caused this to be erected here." And I said, that's an easy one.
Construction of the Guidestones began almost immediately. In October of 1979, Christian, through Wyatt Martin, purchased a 5-acre plot of land from nearby farm owner Wayne Mullinex. After a whirlwind of consultation and construction, the town gathered to watch the public unveiling on March 22, 1980. For the first time, the townsfolk gazed upon the thing responsible for rumors throughout their community.
This was a big deal for the city of Elberton, and they were very proud of the work that had been done on the Guidestone. So anyone who was anyone was there. They had local officials from the government, the mayor was there, there was a congressman, Doug Bernard from Atlanta, that came down, and of course Joe Finley and Wyatt Martin and folks associated with the Granite Association.
This monument was more than imposing. The primary rocks were each 16 feet tall, and four of them weighed more than 20 tons apiece. Together, they supported a 25,000-pound capstone. The capstone bears a message in four ancient languages. Let these be guidestones to an age of reason. The 10 precepts can be loosely classed into several categories, primarily concerning the environment, population control, and global governance. Some of the precepts seem more philosophical or abstract, while others are surprisingly, and perhaps disturbingly, specific. The first of the precepts is the most controversial. Maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. In a world with more than 7 billion human beings, 500 million seems like a tall order. It also seems incredibly unlikely that the human population would dwindle to this number by any natural means.
Who gets to be in that 500 million? And once we exceed that, what do we do to get rid of the people that have exceeded that? How do we measure out, separate the wheat from the chaff? It's not clear. And I think the fact that it's not clear is something that causes a lot of suspicion and connection with things like the New World Order and the idea that this shadowy cabal, an Illuminati-esque force, is somehow trying to guide the course of civilization with only their chosen few having a seat at the table.
It's important to remember that R.C. Christian, whoever he was, had the stones built during the height of the Cold War.
He wrote that precept in the days when Russia and the United States were sitting with atomic rockets aimed at each other, and the slightest thing could have destroyed both countries and killed millions of people.
According to Mr. Martin, based on the conversations he had directly with Mr. Christian, these stones were meant to serve as a rallying post, a sort of a guide for a new society that may emerge from the ashes of an old one, whether through nuclear holocaust or government collapse, any number of scenarios, but you have to know that the idea of being bombed into submission was certainly in the front of Mr. Christian's mind, and this was his way of saying, let's restart society from here.
It's no secret that a great deal has changed in the decades since the construction of this monument. The world's population continues to rise, nation-states are falling into chaos, and climate change is becoming an increasingly visible and frightening international issue. While it could be argued that Christian and the group he represented were paranoid, there's no denying that aspects of human civilization have been set down a precipitous and precarious path.
R.C. Christian told Mr. Martin that he chose that name because he's a Christian. But to me, the God of the Georgia Guidestones is Mother Earth, is nature. Be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. This idea that we have become, in some way, a cancer on the earth, and that this is what we've evolved to become. So if given the opportunity to do a reset, let's try to guide that reproduction in such a way that we do not usurp the natural resources that we've been given. Let us nurture the earth rather than just rape and pillage it for the purposes of greed. We have these resources at our disposal in order to help us live and thrive. Let's treat them with respect. The message of the Guidestones to me, and I think this is a fundamentally important aspect of them, is that they are very open-ended. Each individual kind of brings themselves to the experience and kind of interprets them through that lens.
The public was never completely at ease with these stones. Onlookers interpreted the message of the stone in various, often contradictory ways.
There were those that were very closely associated with the granite industry who looked at it as an example of the kind of work they could do, the kind of ingenuity that they had and their work ethic there in the community. Then there were others that were suspicious. The secrecy for them was a sign of guilt, was in some way a condemnation of this project. Why don't you want people to know who you are? Obviously, there's something sinister at play. When you start introducing religion into that, it creates a pretty murky territory where you had local ministers speaking out against the Guidestones, saying things like they believe they were somehow connected to Satanism, somehow connected to witchcraft.
I knew people that lived just very close by, and so they would let me know when they were doing their rituals and driven by, and they were chanting, walking around, throwing down rose petals. Actually went out to it right after they had left, and you know, they had candles burning. At times there would be sacrifices made up there of animals, not sure what kind of animals, the blood. They're obviously occultic in nature. You know, they're obviously satanic worship type things.
How can we know this group isn't some satanic cult, people wondered, if they won't tell us who they are? This question dogs the Guidestones in the modern day. Who did R.C. Christian represent? There are several theories, many of which hinge on interpretations of scant evidence or even outright speculation. The choice of Christian's pseudonym, R.C. Christian, has led several investigators to imagine Christian represents a group of Rosicrucians. This secretive society formed in the 17th and 18th century, launched by a pamphlet appearing in 1614 concerning a mythical 15th century knight called Christian Rosencruz. While many different and independent groups identify themselves as Rosicrucians, these groups tend to have several commonalities, including the study of metaphysical, mystical, and alchemical lore. The pamphlet that launched this movement was, like the Guidestones, written anonymously. Freemasons are another popular suspect and often described hand in hand with the Rosicrucian theory.
Mr. Martin kept all of the bank records and statements and everything and anything associated with his experience with this Guidestones project. He was kind enough to give me all of the articles and photos and postcards that he had that did not directly reveal the identity of R.C. Christian. The most fascinating, really, artifact that I got from this treasure trove of documents was a letter from R.C. Christian, signed in his own hand, that was meant to debunk some of the more outlandish, in his opinion, views of what the Guidestones and their precepts meant. The idea that it was somehow associated with demonology or the occult or some kind of, you know, ritualistic satanic order. He very, very vehemently denied this, and time and time again came back to this idea of it being about reason, about being a rallying cry for even-handed thinking about the future of society rather than some sort of witchcraft.
If the search for the identity of this group depends on haphazard speculation, the search for the man calling himself Robert Christian descends into even murkier territory. There are numerous stories regarding Christian's true identity, and some are more reliable than others. One popular guess depends on the scant evidence available from Wyatt's correspondence and the published work Common Sense Renewed, which Christian, and presumably his backers, kept on hand for free at the local library.
It was clearly Thomas Paine, Common Sense philosophy about, like, let's just get back to a more Enlightenment kind of philosophy of moving forward intellectually. That being said, in it there are some passages that do border on eugenic notions, the idea of culling out a less desirable aspect of the population, whether it be physically or mentally undesirable. And the language is very flowery and poetic, so it doesn't quite come right out and say this stuff. It uses a lot of analogies and a lot of very creative mental imagery, but there is a sense that there is an element in society that Mr. Christian doesn't want.
At various times, researchers have claimed the curious man was an eccentric billionaire, a cult leader, or even Ted Turner. Still other theorists suggest that the real R.C. Christian is a eugenicist named Robert Carter Cook. So far, all of these claims have one thing in common. None of them have proven to be true.
Mr. Martin really characterized his relationship with R.C. Christian in a very businesslike manner. You know, he came from this old school way of thinking about, you know, you've got a client, you've got a banker or a lawyer or something like that. There is inherent privilege there, and there is inherent need for secrecy that carries on way beyond the grave. So yeah, it was really important for Mr. Martin to keep that secret for no other reason than that he promised the man he would do it.
I said, why don't we just publish in the paper or the magazines or all these TV programs that we're doing now? Why don't we just give your name and your group? He said, if I did that with just those old stones sticking up with those 10 precepts on it, how many people would ever come and read it? He said, as long as it's a mystery, people will go out and look at it, and hopefully some of it will sink into their head.
By removing his true self from the equation, Christian was creating an enduring puzzle, one that ensured the stones would remain a subject of intrigue for decades and perhaps centuries to come.
I think that Mr. Martin gave me these documents as a way of unburdening himself. He had children, he is married, he had a life beyond the Guidestones, but yet he, throughout that time, maintained this, you know, kind of mythical place as being the central figure in the story. He was ready to let go, and he actually burned everything other than what he gave me, anything that had R.C. Christian's identifying information on it. We went out to an overpass bridge near his home, and we set all of those documents on fire in a barrel, and he was gracious enough to allow us to watch this process and put it in the film. I think it was a very cathartic moment for him, and for me, certainly a glimpse into his mind and the way that he viewed his position in this whole thing. I don't know who it is. I could have taken a peek into that burning barrel and caught a name, but you know what? It wouldn't have made the story any better. If anything, it would have made it worse. It would have taken the magic out of it, taken the imagination out of the whole thing, and that to me just would have drained the appeal right out of it. I think that mystery is what has kept this thing alive for so long and why people still talk about it and are fascinated by it.
To skeptics, the oddity known as the Georgia Guidestones is just that, an oddity. A roadside attraction doomed to be neglected and, eventually, forgotten. To others, it is a promising or ominous harbinger of a new age. We don't know what happened to R.C. Christian, but one thing's for sure. His message is spreading across the world. Perhaps the most important question here isn't who wrote these precepts. Perhaps, instead, we should be asking who will be the last to read them, and when.